Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
Already have the show, I think, pretty much booked for tomorrow. Ilya Shapiro will be with us. He's now with the Manhattan Institute. You might remember Ilya was sort of run out of the Georgetown Law School because of wokeness. And we'll talk about Justice Thomas, and that's the topic tomorrow, because he's been kind of booted out of, well, he decided to, I think, take his name out of the administration. He was doing some teaching at George Washington University, and they wanted him fired, and he basically said, okay, I'm gone. I don't need all this, especially at his age. So we'll talk to Ilya about that. There was a monstrous piece of federal legislation that I'm assuming, if I told you the details of it, would probably put you to sleep, called Sarbanes-Oxley many years ago. And it's one of those in-the-weeds types of federal pieces of legislation that happened in the aftermath of 2008 that went way overboard and has complicated things for many businesses in this country. And there's an effort to repeal Sarbanes-Oxley, which is possible with a Republican House and Senate. And we'll talk about that with John Barlow from CEI tomorrow, the Competitive Enterprise Institute. That I don't want that to bore you too much, because it really is important. We're going to explain it. Kilmeade's going to be with us tomorrow. Tax Foundation is going to join us to talk about the Inflation Reduction Act, which is just a big joke to talk about that. So we're loaded up for tomorrow. On Friday, the roundtable, Jane Duker, Gene Evans, and Jeff Smith will be here. Let's run down some of the other things that happened last night with some of the folks who are on the roundtable on a regular basis. First and foremost, Mary Elizabeth Coleman, state rep who will become potentially a state senator. She still has a general election in November, won a very crowded primary in Senate District 22 in Jeffco. Mary Elizabeth, how are you? Congratulations on the victory yesterday.
Thanks. I'm pretty tired.
I can imagine. So, you know, how many times have you been on the ballot total right now in your life?
Five. I'm counting. So city council, and then four times in a primary and in a general. And so this is my sixth time on the ballot.
So I've never been, you know, on a ballot. I've been in some war rooms, though, and people are waiting for results. And I can't even imagine, because even if you think you're going to win or you feel pretty confident, you just don't know, right?
Yeah, you have really no idea. So the early returns came in and it looked really good. But you don't get a breakdown of precincts. And so for people who haven't run for office, a state Senate seat has, I think I had 42 different precincts. And so you naturally, I'm stronger in the areas that we worked harder. And so you're kind of looking to see, like, okay, where's my home state rep seat? Are they coming in from the areas that we were really focusing on? And without knowing that, there's potential that somebody who, for example, represented another House seat, their margin could have been bigger in their home seat and kind of come through. So until you get that call from, in my case, Ken Waller, the new incoming state representative and the current county clerk for Jefferson County, saying, listen, I'm calling it. We've got 98% of the precincts reporting. Congratulations, you've won. You really just kind of hold in your breath, waiting to see what happens.
Now, did Ken win the seat that you're vacating?
No, he's in Becky Ruth's old seat-ish.
Okay.
So because of the redistricting, the lines have all shifted a little bit. But basically, Ken is replacing Becky Ruth.
Yeah, I like Ken Waller. I thought he did a good job when he was. I lived in Jeffco when he was the county executive, so I would root for him. So this was a big night. We're going to have Nick Schroer on in a couple of minutes too, representing the other side of the listening audience. As we are sandwiched, St. Louis County in between Jeffco and St. Charles County. Nick won big last night too, but you're all backed by Jim Lemke. Is someone who used to be a state senator and a legislative staffer, very active in politics in Missouri. There was a PAC that was put together to support the conservative caucus candidates. You were included in that, and it was a big night for the conservative caucus, wasn't it?
Yeah, so I think part of that is because the electorate actually is conservative. And so if you have a group that's called the conservative caucus that is supporting you, who's wanting to see, you know, kind of traditional Republican plank platform issues, the electorate is going to navigate to those people. So I haven't seen Nick's results. I know he won big in a four-way primary. I won by almost 11%. And certainly part of that is who is the most conservative, member. So Nick and I both had Missouri Right to Life endorsements. We both had Missouri Firearms Coalition saying we were the most 2A friendly. I think he was also endorsed by Americans for Prosperity Missouri. I mean, so you look at kind of the coalition that each of us built. St. Charles and Jeffco are different, but we're not so different in the electorate that they're looking for champions of the party platform.
So the breakdown in the Senate, you got 34 members of the Senate, which you might become one of into next year if you win in November. You have a 7-member conservative caucus. That was this year. 17 senators aligned with Republican leadership and then 10 Democrats. And it's been said that the 7-member conservative caucus and Senator Ondrejan Igel in particular were kind of rabble rousers. And the infighting that went on during the legislative session really became between Republicans and Republicans and not Democrats and Republicans. So obviously people think that some of that was dysfunctional. Obviously, they're fighting for their causes. But what would you say about the potential for the conservative caucus to work with the other groups in the next legislative session?
Well, so I think that it's very, very high. So one of the things, I'm a mom of a bunch of kids, right? And sometimes I think you don't necessarily have any bad kid, but you get a bad class of kids where the personalities just aren't working for whatever reason. And I think we saw a lot of that last session where it wasn't necessarily, you know, no one senator is a bad senator, but the combination of personalities and whatever has happened has made it just completely dysfunctional. And so what I can tell you is I'm really focused on making sure that whoever gets elected, when I'm elected to serve in the state Senate, if they're there to work on moving forward education reform, tax reform, doing away with a lot of the administrative state, reducing barriers for businesses to have access, like, I'm going to be there right with you, working alongside of you. I don't care whether you're part of this group or that group or a Republican or a Democrat. I think Missourians really want people who are going to be finding solutions and working hard to fix the problems of the state. And so that's really what I'm going to be focused on. And I have a lot of hope for next session. I think that you're going to have a different mix of personalities and it's going to go better. And I think hopefully we're going to see this decline of the Republican versus Republican infighting.
State Representative Mary Elizabeth Coleman, who is a Reardon Roundtable veteran, she won in the primary for the state Senate in District 22. Off of that particular race, what did you think of what happened in Kansas last night with the abortion amendment?
Yeah, so I got to tell you, I read that amendment 5 times and was left not exactly clear. You know, if you're not an attorney, if you're not practicing in this area, if you're not living and breathing it, it was kind of confusing. And so often no is the default proposition that people will vote on if they don't understand the writing. And I think it was a little overly lawyered. And, I know that it's kind of being touted nationally as a big failure for the pro-life movement, but I think it was more of a referendum of the language just it wasn't great. It was pretty confusing.
Yeah, and I have heard that.
If it's confusing, it's a no. People are just going to say no.
Right. I have heard that from some others doing some post-game analysis of that as well. Well, Mary Elizabeth, again, congratulations. Just a quick question, though. Were there any other members of that crowded field in your district who have been on the Reardon Roundtable? I don't believe so, right?
I don't think so.
Yeah, so you got to think that that's really what pushed you over the top, don't you, at this point? Because there's two things that happen, as you know. You either get pushed over the top or you go to federal prison, and hopefully the latter will not happen to you.
The latter, I promise you, is not going to happen to me. So it must be the former.
All right, good. Well, listen, we'll see you on the roundtable soon. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks,
Mike. Take care. 517. Well, yeah, we aren't five members of the roundtable, all told, have been either in federal prison or heading to federal prison. It's a good number. Nick Schroer is with us. He's also a state rep, and he won his primary for State Senate District 2. He's been on the roundtable as well. Hey, Nick, congratulations on your victory yesterday.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I do think that being on the roundtable, I think two times, is what got me over the finish line.
Yeah, suck up as much as you possibly can because the host does appreciate it. So thank you for that. But let me kind of launch off of what Mary Elizabeth said. I don't know if you heard the entire conversation about this past legislative session and some of the dysfunction. She said part of that, and I think there might be something to that, was personality conflicts and not maybe everyone just disagreeing on policy. I think maybe a combination deal. But the obviously the left and maybe even, well, certainly the media, the Post-Dispatch, wants to put anything that happens in the legislature that's negative on the conservative caucus. That seems to be a pattern of theirs. But what would you say about that, Nick?
Well, I think, you know, I think the polarization of politics over the past several years has contributed a lot to the infighting. And I think, you know, with some of the personalities, to her point, you know, didn't allow them in the Senate to focus on the true goal of representing people, advocating for the people, getting tax cuts done, getting the woke garbage out of our schools and out of our curriculum. And I think what is truly lacking in the Senate, which Mary Elizabeth, myself, Curtis Trent, and even Ben Brown, to a large extent, were either A, attorneys, or have gone through the legal system. And in Ben's case, attacking St. Louis City after they shut him down during COVID. But I think what we need is a mediator, somebody that can actually get the party to focus back on what the true goals are, the Republican Party platform, and actually get work done. I think myself, Mary Elizabeth Coleman, Curtis Trent, we've proven that time and time again in the past couple of years in the House, of passing massive legislation, whether it was the heartbeat bill, the trigger law, law enforcement officers' bill of rights. And these are things that you know, our constituency was very pleased with, but they're not pleased with the fact that we haven't cut taxes. We haven't dealt with the sports betting thing. You know, medical marijuana could have been on the forefront because of the initiative petition process. So there's a lot of things that we still have to get done. I think this is going to be the year because we do have true leaders, all happen to be millennials as well.
So what would the, I mean, I think you named a couple of them, you ticked them off there, but heading into the session, you still have to win a general as well, but these are relatively safe districts. So let's just talk. If you are in the Senate in the next legislative session, what do you want to see the focus to be on, Nick?
Well, I think number one for me is going to be education choice. You know, we can fix a lot of these problems with schools, with the pornographic material, with the critical race theory and indoctrination, or the woke gender garbage that we're seeing second and third graders being taught. We can fix a lot of that by going free market, so to speak, and having these tax dollars, your tax dollars, follow your kid to the institution that you as the parent believe is best. I think secondly, tax cuts, personal property tax, getting rid of that, phasing out fully real estate taxation while still focusing on funding these vital resources like our first responders, police. And to that point, I think keeping our community safe. I had a bill this year, got halfway through the process, taking back control of the St. Louis City Police Department. We've seen what Tashara Jones, Kim Gardner, Cori Bush, all of them have pushed and pushed and pushed on the backs of police, to the point where we're seeing record high exits from the police department as crime is soaring and even spreading into St. Charles County. And I think lastly, with a lot of these issues that we've seen in elections, we have to address bringing more truth in elections. There were so many lies and smears that the public just really didn't know what to believe. And I think we need to clear some of that up, because if you're going to work for the people and ultimately try to use their tax dollars to enrich yourself, you need to tell the truth. And I think if the constituency were to lie to the government, there would be some serious repercussions. It needs to be flipped around.
What's your reaction to what happened in the Senate primary yesterday? Thoughts on that?
Oh, well, you know, the U.S. Senate primary, I think that, you know, the best man won, so to speak. I really liked both of the Erics. I like Vicky Hartzler. I liked a lot of the individuals that were in that race in a very crowded field. But I think what the Attorney General Eric Schmidt has done over the past year, 2 years, working with me on the heartbeat bill, working with me on police reforms, and going after these schools that are, you know, sending kids home, forcing them to mask up, it's exactly what the people wanted. So I'm not surprised that he was able to get the victory. I was surprised that Eric Greitens fell as much as he did. And I think those massive media campaigns actually contributed to it. But yeah, I think when you look at the state Senate campaigns, like you mentioned it previously, a lot of these individuals that are hardcore fighters, that are conservative fighters, myself, Mary Elizabeth Coleman, Curtis Trent, and many others, we got elected because we are, you know, boots on the ground, touching base with all of the constituency. And I think that's exactly what we need to bring back into politics, is a voice of the people.
Nick Schwartz, thank you so much for coming on here. And I'm sure you're taking a bit of a breather here before gearing up for the next race. But congratulations. We'll catch you on the roundtable soon.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. God bless.
He mentioned the woke education stuff. That reminded me. I should talk about this with Zig coming up. John Ziegler's coming up from L.A., but I got a few other things.
That'll get him going.
But listen to this. So there's a California school district, no surprise, paying woke kindergarten education consultants. It's actually called, that. Woke Kindergarten's homepage calls the organization a global abolitionist early childhood ecosystem.
What?
And it says it's supporting children, families, educators, and organizations in their commitment to abolitionist early education, pro-black, and queer and trans liberation.
Who keeps us safe? We keep us safe. We don't police us. We don't arrest us.
What?
Well, yes. The scope of the contract.
We don't arrest us.
We don't arrest us because we don't like police. That's basically what she's saying.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, you know, it's an anti-police thing. The resources are, this is how they spell it out. I guess you got to give them credit for honesty. Disrupt whiteness,
okay.
White dominant settler colonial narratives, and anti-blackness in the Glassbrook elementary school community. It's all about white supremacy in even in kindergarten.
Oh, that's
and this, by the way, for the Post-Dispatch and the lefties out there that say nothing to see here. Oh, it's happening, and it's happening in California. They can have it in California.
Yes,
I don't want any part of it here in Missouri.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We, as soon as I wrapped up election coverage last night, I got home and started getting alerts that Vin Scully had passed away at the age of 94.
High fly ball into right field. She is gone! In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
Yeah, that's the Kirk Gibson home run from 1988. And, you know, I think we have a lot of relatability here in St. Louis and Cardinal Nation with Vin Scully because of Jack Buck and, of course, now John Rooney and Mike Shannon, because this guy David Wharton wrote in the LA Times this morning, the way Vin Scully called the game, it felt like bumping into an old friend. There were stories to tell, memories to share, his soothing banter. Of course, he would start the day by saying, "Hi, everybody. A very pleasant good afternoon to you, wherever you may be. Pull up a chair and spend a part of the day with us." And, you know, many of us, come from an era where you would listen to baseball on the radio quite a bit. You might even bring your transistor radio to the ballpark while you were watching the game here in St. Louis or at Dodger Stadium. My friend John Ziegler from Los Angeles is with us tonight. We're going to talk about some politics and other stuff, too. But I know you wanted to weigh in. I wanted you to weigh in on Vin Scully. How are you, John?
I'm doing fine. I'm one of those that they used to bring the transistor radio to school to listen to daytime playoff games for the Philadelphia Phillies when I grew up in the Philadelphia area in the 1970s. A different era. And, there, you know, a lot has been said, obviously, about Vin Scully. I think I have a couple things that are somewhat unique about this situation and why it is that there will never be another Vin Scully. One of it's because of his great talent, and that's obvious, and the way sportscasters are now chosen has been completely changed. But the biggest reason is that what made Vin Scully famous are the moments like the one you played with the Kirk Gibson home run. And those moments are no longer possible for a hundred different reasons. Let's just use the Kirk Gibson example, right? So if today that happened, right, in 1988, we were still living in a fairly uncynical time, and sports was still at least partially sports and wasn't all business.
Right.
Kirk Gibson wouldn't even have come to the plate because his agent would have prevented him from doing so, for risking his future value in free agency or trade or whatever.
You're not wrong. You are not wrong about that.
It would never have happened. And if it did happen, nobody would have been watching, because we now have 800 different TV channels and 10,000 internet sites and streaming services. So there's no uniting force of television. Television used to be, and radio before that, was a tremendous uniting force. Now it is the greatest divisive force known to man. We are totally divided. There's no communal experience. There's nothing that reaches the level of, I've got to talk about this with my friends or at the proverbial water cooler right at work. It does not exist anymore. The reason why we remember the Kirk Gibson situation is not only it was an amazing event, but because it had an enormous audience. So everybody talked about it for more than 15 minutes before we moved on to something else. Today, it would have flashed on Twitter for half an hour, trended, and then it would have been gone.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, so that's a large part of the reason why there will never be another Vin Scully, because the media landscape has so dramatically, and in my opinion, for the worse, changed in a way that doesn't make it possible.
Yeah, sadly, I don't think you're wrong about that. And it's, look, we're all, you're radio talk show hosts. I'm doing this right now. You don't know how long it's going to last because the landscape has changed. But a lot of people, I don't think people have this reaction with Vin Scully. I know a lot of people nationally, John, because he did call games on CBS, but they didn't really get Jack Buck's style of calling a game. And we loved him here in St. Louis, and he was that friend and soothing voice. But some people, and this is true with Jack Buck, or I'm sorry, with his son too, with Joe Buck. I like Joe's style. Some people don't like his style. But Vin didn't really seem to have those criticisms. Everyone seemed to like Vin Scully's style of calling the game.
Well, you know, even though I'm in Los Angeles, I'll be as objective as I can be here. Since we talked about Kirk Gibson, I thought Jack Buck's call of Kirk Gibson's home run was way better than Vin Scully's.
Yeah.
I don't believe what I just saw.
That's true. Yeah.
I mean, that was way better. Not that Vin's was bad, but, you know, to me, Jack Buck's was amazing. But as far as Vin Scully's influence here in Los Angeles, that's another element of this that I don't think is being talked about enough because it's a little politically incorrect. Talk about divisiveness. I mean, this city, Los Angeles, is divided as any could possibly be. I mean, I don't even know that 55% of the population of the residents here speak fluent English. Not to mention that there's all sorts of other dividing lines, economic, social, political. There's nothing unifying any of us. But Vin Scully somehow was able to rise above all that. And I can't imagine anyone being more beloved in the future in Los Angeles on a universal basis. Maybe Magic Johnson, but he was coming from that same era where there were unifying moments. Kobe Bryant, which we lost a couple of years ago, was close to that. But that's the level that Vin Scully was here. And I guarantee you, you're never going to see a white male in Los Angeles be as popular as Vin Scully ever again. That'll never happen.
No. John Ziegler with me from California this afternoon. I have to ask you about this. I had a friend of mine from out there on the West Coast send me this story from the LA Times about the 6th Street Viaduct, which cost $588 million, and you can't even use it because people are taking selfies on it.
That's Los Angeles in a nutshell, isn't it? I mean, it takes forever. It's incredibly expensive. It's beautiful. But because we've completely had the guardrails of society fall apart and there's no rule of law here and the inmates are running the asylum, you can't even use it. I mean, you can't make this stuff up, Mark. I mean, that's where we are now. And it's partially because of the color of the people, the skin of the people that are deciding to take over the bridge, that the authorities can't do anything about it. I mean, that's the world we now live in. And you know, there's been some grumbling in the media. Well, boy, this really makes us look bad. But there's been no outrage over this. I mean, the amount of tax money that is and time and effort that by aggravation that people have endured for this thing to be put up, all for right now, nothing but a black eye.
So let me just get this straight, see if we can go on the record with some stuff. It's a bridge that's supposed to carry cars and trucks over a river, right?
That's my understanding, yeah. I've seen it, but I've never traveled on it.
Right, but I mean now, and I saw the pictures, you got people riding bikes, you have skateboarders, you have people stopping to do selfies. So the people in trucks and cars, they're secondary to the needs of the people with strollers and taking photos and just kind of walking on the bridge, which is
right.
And it is a really cool looking bridge. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen, we've got a couple of nice bridges here in St. Louis, I don't think I've ever seen a bridge like this. I can see why it cost $588 million.
No, it's a good looking bridge, but apparently another thing that they had a problem with was people speed racing on it. Which of course is illegal. But I mean, it just encapsulates Los Angeles in a nutshell.
I just did this story about this woke kindergarten program out there too that I know Fox covered. This is just amazing that, well, first of all, that it's kindergarten. Maybe I shouldn't be surprised anymore, and that these groups keep trying to force this stuff. Did you see, John, let me back up a little bit because I think this plays into it. Did you see the whole Demi Lovato story today?
I saw the headline.
Okay,
yeah.
So she's decided that she's no longer, them. She's gone back to being she, her. So you got to hear this. So listen to this right now.
I've actually adopted the pronouns of she, her again. So for me, I'm such a fluid person. I felt like, especially last year, my energy was balanced in my masculine and feminine energy. I didn't feel necessarily like a woman. I didn't feel like a man. I just felt like a human. And that's what they, them is about for me. It's just about like feeling human at your core.
What an idiot. I'm just going to stop right there. She is the biggest idiot. And the fact that people buy into this, I put this as exhibit A, how you can just blow up all this gender nonsense. And I said earlier, you know, if people truly, there are probably a small percentage of people who have gender dysphoria, and I understand that. It's probably a difficult thing, but this has gone way out of control. But I bring it up because in this district out there in your neck of the woods, they're spending $20,000 for woke education on anti-racism and gender stuff.
Yeah, well, because, you know, kindergartners are known to be racist and homophobic.
My daughter, who's seven, John,
Angeles.
Yeah, my daughter misgenders people all the time. It's just horrifying. She gets called out by her classmates, and I can't do anything about it.
Are you being for real here?
No, I mean, it's just utterly.
I mean, it's hard to know anymore.
It is hard to know, right? I know.
I mean, that's the insanity of it. I guess there's so many elements of this that are confusing, but the part that is most baffling to me is the political element. What is the percentage of the population to whom the left is appealing to with this movement? I mean, it has to be minuscule. And the number of people that they're offending is enormous. But they don't care.
I'm baffled by this, too. I really am. I don't think they care, and I think they know they have the media. Look, I played this. Here, I'll do this. I'm listening to this Sirius station, Hits 1, right? This morning I'm with my daughter. I had to turn it down, but I rewound it because I wanted to hear what they had to say. So listen to the way that they do the story.
So Demi Lovato is once again adopting some new pronouns. Well, not really adopting new ones, going back to she, her.
She, her.
I think she's keeping they, them, as an option. But she says she's feeling more feminine lately.
Okay.
And she says, you know, it's just she's very fluid when it comes to her gender.
So they basically say what she says, but they're just going along with this story saying this is normal, you know. But it's a serious issue
right.
for me because you have a lot of kids that are very impressionable, especially coming out of the pandemic. Maybe they're 12, 13 years old. I don't know if you've looked at the Pitt board on Substack with all these parents of these transitioning children, many of whom are now deciding, okay, I'm not, you know, I wasn't that, or I'm not
right,
this now.
Right.
I've just decided I'm gay or something else. It's just utter lunacy, and it's got to be reeled in. But you got disc jockeys on Hits 1, and, you know, I read about this in on CNN's website to do just justifying. It's just normal for Demi Lovato and others just go back and forth on their pronouns, John.
Well, let's explain why that happens in the media. Do the members of the media who are doing this really believe in this stuff? Most of them do not. They're doing it because they instinctively know that this is one of those issues that can get you fired, if depending on the nature of your audience.
That's right.
So you will always, always in this business, I mean, where the gig is everything, and good gigs are hard to find, especially if you lose one for being anti-woke, you will always toe the line. That's how we got mask mandates for as long as we did, because everyone was terrified of, you know, saying that the emperor has no clothes. That's what this is. It's the emperor has no clothes. It's the fairy tale that we were supposed to all know as a kid, which apparently most of us forgot, because it, to me, over the last 3 years, it was the most important lesson you could have ever learned, is that occasionally you have to call out the emperor for having no damn clothes. And this is one of those situations.
I was so encouraged. I went up to Chicago. My dad is 80 years old today, John, and we wished him a happy birthday earlier. But we had a birthday party in Chicago on Sunday, and I was coming back. My family were coming back from Florida, so we flew to Chicago, and then we drove back. My niece goes to SLU, and I know my niece pretty well, but you're in a five-hour car ride with someone. You talk about a lot of things. And we kind of got into this issue, the gender issue, and I was so encouraged as someone who's 22 years old. If there were more kids out there like her and her age group, because she said, and she's being sensitive to the nature of the topic, but also saying it's gone too far. And I'm hopeful that a lot of people, I think, are realizing that at this point. Even the LA Times and the Washington Post, they're daring to put some of the alternative, which I would call the correct version and interpretation of some of this, on their pages, which I didn't see a couple of years ago. So I think the tide is turning at least a little bit.
Well, I hope so. I think you're right. How much it's going to impact things, I don't know. I mean, to me, there's a half dozen reasons why Democrats need to lose in the fall, and this is one of them, because it's the only way to send the message that, wait a minute, you guys went too far here.
By the way, we got good result in our race here in the Senate race. There was some concern about making this competitive with our former governor, Eric Greitens, but that did not happen. And a big victory for our attorney general. Zig, always great to hook up with you. How's the golf game shaping up this summer?
Pretty good. Got a couple big tournaments coming up.
Excellent. Keep us posted. We'll see you.
Thanks.
Full show already set tomorrow. Ilya Shapiro, who's now with the Manhattan Institute, they kind of ran him out of Georgetown Law. He's going to talk about someone else that kind of got run out of another law school at George Washington. That is one of the United States Supreme Court members, Clarence Thomas. We'll talk about the Inflation Reduction Act. I can hardly say that without like spitting Diet Coke out of my nose. We'll break down the numbers from that, because if you dig into the taxes, Joe Manchin is fooling himself. I'm not sure. He's getting something. We learned yesterday he's getting a good pipeline, a big pipeline he's been working on for a decade. So that's how he's getting paid off. But he's just completely embarrassing himself by, you know, indicating that there's no tax increases in this. So all that tomorrow. We already have the roundtable set. Post-election roundtable on Friday. Gene Evans, former state senator Jeff Smith will all be here coming up on Friday.
Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Cut of the Day is sponsored this afternoon by my friends at the Good Feet Store. It's all about comfort, energy, performance, and pain relief. And we love our baseball here in St. Louis. And Vin Scully passed away at the age of 94. And he told some great stories.
On this day, October the 2nd, 1936, a little redheaded kid was walking home from school, went by a Chinese laundry, and the little kid, not quite 9, 8 3/4, leaving grammar school on his way home. And I went by a Chinese laundry, and the line score of a baseball game was pasted on the window. And it showed game two of the World Series, with the Yankees beating the Giants 18-4. Imagine, a reserve seat cost $5. Well, anyway, as that little redheaded kid looked and saw, oh, wow, the poor Giants. That was my reaction. And so I became not only a Giants fan, but a big fan of baseball. My school was less than 20 blocks to the old Polo Grounds where the New York Giants played. And because I was a member of the Police Athletic League, Catholic Youth Organization, I could game free from Monday to Friday. We got out of school at 2:30. The Giant games were 3:15. And so I could go to the ball game. And so I just fell in love with baseball. The point of the whole story is this. My first love was October the 2nd, 1936, second game of the World Series. Today is October the 2nd, 2016. A lot of time has gone by. Exactly 80 years to the minute.
Vin Scully was 94 Aww. Years old when he passed away. A legend, there's no doubt. Have a great evening. We'll talk tomorrow at 3.
Get more at 971talk.com. Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.